Hi, folks, and welcome to our special edition of the New York Now podcast. I'm Matt Ryan. If you watch our latest show, you will see our friend Ken Lovett's final appearance at the Reporters Roundtable. Ken has been an outstanding breaking story machine for years now at the state capitol, the last decade plus for the Daily News as its bureau chief. He announced a few weeks ago that he was stepping away from the world of journalism. But before he does that, he joins us for a look back at his years covering, as David Patterson would say, Planet Albany. It's a really interesting conversation and one I think you'll enjoy. I'm joined in the conversation by my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
No one has been more incisive as a guest on the New York Now Reporters Roundtable than Ken. I think since I started doing the show about 10 years ago, you've been the most regular guest, with the exception of Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Your commentary has always been tough and on point, as one would expect from a hard-nosed tabloid journalist such as yourself. Ken, you have said that all of these remembrances and honorifics for you over the course of the last couple of weeks has been like reading your own obituary.
Yeah, it's like watching your funeral on social media. It's been really, at times, overwhelming. Because, you know, I don't really focus on legacy or anything like that in the day-to-day. You know, you're trying to get stories, you're trying to work, and I just never really take time to really assess that. Once in a rare while, I think at one point on the 9/11 anniversary, the 10-year anniversary, I was watching, and they brought back, Bloomberg and Giuliani, and they brought back Pataki and Cuomo, and they had George W. Bush and Obama and Hillary Clinton and Bill. And I looked, and I remember thinking, well, I've interviewed all those people. And it was one of the rare moments where I got reflective, and I was like, that's pretty good job to have. But the last couple of weeks have just been really, like, bizarre, because it's been, an outpouring of real nice support. But something I'm somewhat uncomfortable with, because I'm not used to being that part of the story.
We have a couple of kind of lightning round questions for you. One that I wanted to ask at the top: what do you think is the most remarkable story that you've covered down through the decades, whether it's a single story or sort of a narrative over the course of time?
I think if I look at it overall, the two biggest ones that come to mind were the presidential recount in 2000. Mm-hmm. I was down in Florida for the New York Post for three and a half weeks. And I remember saying at the time, this is the biggest story, I said to my colleague Greg Birnbaum, that we'll ever cover. It'll be in our obituary, the selection of a president like this. You know, it hasn't happened over 100 years. And then a few months later, 9/11 happened. And I went to Boston, where the planes took off from. I was there for a week interviewing people, and then down to New York City and to the site. So those were two of the biggest stories. I think in Albany, the Alan Hevesy scandal, I did a lot of reporting on that I was very proud of. And
The former comptroller. First stepped down because of little felonies.
But this became a major pay-to-play scandal.
Yeah, and then a couple of years later ended up going to big boy federal prison for bigger problems.
So that was a big story here in Albany. And then I was really proud of there were other stories as well, but I think the Moreland Commission, finding out that the governor's people were interfering with this anti-corruption panel he had set up once it started looking into him, I think that was really one of the first times the governor got caught up in a big scandal.
One of the neat little corners that you've covered over the years, too, and it's been kind of an intersection of some of your loves, you've covered the parole hearings, right, for Mark David Chapman, who, of course, killed John Lennon.
And that was one of those rare times I got reflective, because the first time I did it was in 2000. It was the first time he came up for parole. I just started at the New York Post, and as a huge Beatle fan, when John Lennon was killed in 1980, I was 14, and I was on Long Island, and I would buy the Post, the News, the Times, and Newsday, and I clipped out all those stories about the murder and about Lennon for 2 weeks. So then when I first wrote about the parole of Mark David Chapman, and it was in the New York Post, it really struck me that I'm now writing for the paper I used to clip on this issue. And that was a really good feeling, cool feeling, like, wow, Because I had always wanted, ever since I broke into the business, I wanted to work for a New York City paper, and I was fortunate enough I got to work for two.
Mm. Okay, fast impressions of governors you have covered.
Five of them.
Yeah, I know. So just give us either a word or a phrase for each of them. Mario Cuomo.
Mario Cuomo, tough but accessible.
George Pataki?
Lost interest in dealing with the LCA.
Elliot Spitzer?
I'm not sure I should use the word that came to mind, but he was really someone I thought was condescending and he was hard charging, but without the subpoena power, didn't understand how government worked.
That's more than a phrase.
Yeah, sorry.
I gotta be honest. David Paterson.
Over his head, but a nice guy.
And Andrew Cuomo.
Probably the toughest governor, but probably the most successful governor I covered, but really tough to deal with as an administration and as a governor, and also very, very inaccessible.
Who is the most odious political figure, elected official, that you ever covered?
Ooh.
It's a big cast.
Yeah, it really
of characters.
Is a big cast. Yeah. Like Vito Lopez comes to mind just for the sexual harassment stuff he did. I don't like people who are sanctimonious. I mean, there's been a lot of criminals, even like a Joe Bruno, who was ultimately acquitted, the former Senate Majority Leader. One of my favorite people I ever covered. You know, you kind of separated the person. But Spitzer was, as a person, lacked something. Forgetting the scandals.
Yeah. Top three interview subjects over the year.
Top three interview subjects.
Who did you like to interview the most, and who was the most accessible to you?
Bruno was really good. If you're talking government, I mean, mm-hmm. there's been, you know, celebrities that I got to do. Getting Bill Clinton when I was with the Times Hall Record in Middletown, mm-hmm. and really being the only reporter there, he came to address West Point, and I was at the airport, and I sandbagged him on the rope line. I got him for 3 minutes, so that was a pretty, that was a good get. You know, we got a local interview with him. Those two.
A little along Casey's line, which lawmaker detested you the most?
Turning the question
when
around.
When you called him up or you saw him in the hallway.
Cuomo wasn't too thrilled with me for a lot of years, this Governor Cuomo. Mm-hmm. I would put him, you know, I think he learned to respect me, but there was, you know, the first year he froze me out for like 7 months. Oddly enough, Jim Brennan, this assemblyman from Brooklyn, who I didn't deal with all that much, mm-hmm. And I called him after he left office, and he refused to take my calls. And I still, to this day, don't know what I did. But so apparently he detested me.
Like someone on Twitter that blocked you, and you have no idea what you did wrong. Best Springsteen song live?
Ha! All of them. All for 4 hours. No, for fun, Rosalita. Not my favorite song of all time, but fun in concert.
Okay, I have a broader Springsteen question. I have a more philosophical Springsteen question, not to put down Matt's question at all, but Matt, Ken, and I are all diehard, nutty Springsteen fans. Ken, however, I think has his beat, at least based on the Love It archives of bootlegs. But Springsteen is somebody who has a real vision for this country, about work, about the way power works, about economics, which are all things that kind of undergird politics. Do you think there's anything about, you know, Springsteen's music that you relate to, you know, the job of journalism or what you've spent your time doing?
I think I related to it before I even got into this. Mm-hmm. So maybe on some level, don't forget a lot of his stuff early on wasn't politics, it was personal, you know, with him and his father, with relationships. But
such is life.
But I will say this, you know, you talk about some of the more fun times, and this is why I liked working at a tabloid. I got to do both the real serious journalism, but also have some fun at times too. And Springsteen and I intersected because in 2000, when he was doing his reunion tour of the E Street Band, he wrote a song that was inspired by the Amadou Diallo shooting down in New York City. An unarmed immigrant was shot 41 times. And he did this song, and I saw it come up. He debuted it in Atlanta before coming to New York for 2 weeks. And I'm like, huh, Springsteen, Diallo, yeah, that's worth a story. And I wrote it. And I was the only one who had it, and it blew up for 2 weeks before Springsteen came, and it became a huge thing. We got him on the front page, and you know, friends were joking with me, saying, "How's it feel? Your idol hates you." And you know, I got to see the show when he debuted this song. It was really and talked to Diallo's parents about it. Mm-hmm. So it was really for 2 weeks I was writing about Bruce Springsteen and politics.
And that was really controversial at that time too. At that concert and the string of concerts there in New York City, you had police officers turning their backs to him.
It was long before the Black Lives Matter movement happened. Did you think at that time, it's going to happen. I'm going to get to talk to Springsteen.
I thought I might. I spoke to Steven Van Zandt, his guitarist, Little Steven, but I never got to Bruce.
That's
one I wish I did.
Okay. One of the great 1-2 punches, Casey, in LCA history has got to go back to the 2000s. And you had Fred Dicker and Ken Lovett in the New York Post Bureau. What was it? What was
Murderers
that like?
Row.
That was a really fun experience. I probably would say I'm most proud of my work that I did at the Daily News as the bureau chief, but I had the most fun at the Post in a lot of ways. I think some of the stuff I got to cover, and despite Fred's image of how he treated sources and everyone else and being this tough guy, he was really good to me. He just let you do your thing.
You're leaving on your own terms.
Should mention where you're going to. I don't think we've done that yet.
Yeah, please do. What are you doing next, Ken? You're not dying, right?
I'm not dying. I'm not dead yet, as Monty Python says. I am going to a consulting firm, Metropolitan Public Strategies. They have corporate, nonprofit, and political clients in New York and Florida, and I'm going to be doing consulting, whether it's helping devise issue campaigns or doing PR work.
You're leaving on your own terms, of course. So many of the people in the modern media landscape, including dear friends of ours, who have been, as it were, shot from the saddle. Bill Hammond, who an outstanding columnist, opinion writer, who was laid off. Glenn Blaine, who was your partner, mm-hmm. in covering the day's events for the Daily News, laid off as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on the media landscape that you're now kind of stepping out of?
It's really unstable. It's crumbling beneath your feet if you're a print journalist, and that's one of the reasons I'm making the move that I am, because I kind of straddled the old school and the new school, because when I first started at the Watertown Times in 1988, it was before cell phones, it was before laptops, it was old school journalism. And we've kind of moved now to, Twitter, because that was before social media, and now it's Twitter, it's 24-hour news cycle, and it's instability in the industry. So when I came to the Daily News and we hired Glenn, we had 4 people, and now it was down to me from 7 months ago. So that was a real reason, because, I didn't know how much longer I would be able to do this, and I wanted to leave on my own terms for that reason. And it's sad, because there's never been more time. Journalism is always needed, especially now, but always. And yet, I don't know how it's going to shake out, what it's going to look like in 5 to 10 years. It'll be different. It'll be there, but it'll be different. And I just felt this was a good time to make the move.
You are also famous for your appearances in the LCA show, and you were shameless about appearing in some of the most revealing costumes, including famously a diaper.
I was in a diaper. I was in a coconut bra.
Kind of a Carmen Miranda number.
And a dress skirt. Yeah. I was in a Elvis outfit, which I was hoping to be the 50s young Elvis. Unfortunately, I looked more like the 70s about to die Elvis. I really, honestly, throughout my career and really my life, I take what I do extremely seriously, but I don't take myself that seriously. And so I love comedy. And so if it gets laughs, I was willing to do it. What I didn't want to do was then be pigeonholed. So I never did the same costume twice, because I didn't want to, wear the diaper again. No, I'm not going to be diaper guy.
That's a one-off.
And thank you for not mentioning the handcuffs, because that was also one of the more bizarre moments, being arrested at the Capitol last year.
And sprung by the governor. So
allegedly. Yeah.
Sort of.
Last question for me. How much pressure was there on you to get breaking news and exclusives? Because one of the cool things for those of us around the Capitol was seeing Ken at times talking on his cell phone in his right hand and his left hand covering his mouth so no one could see what he was saying. How much pressure was there?
I mean, there was pressure, but a lot of it was imposed by myself. Mm-hmm. I just was very competitive. I always felt like I wanted to help new reporters, and I always told them, whatever you need, just ask, as long as it's not competitive. But I did want to break stories. That's, to me, what the fun of it was. And honestly, one of the reasons I'm leaving is I felt more, in the last few months, more writing, because governor goes on radio, I'm going to write a couple of stories. Something happens, I'm going to write a couple of stories. And I wasn't digging as much. And I was still breaking stories because people came to me, but I wasn't finding them on my own. Mm. And that, to me, was the joy of it, is finding, because that's where the real stories reside. The day-to-day stories are fun and can be energizing. But finding the stories, like a Moreland story or the stuff with the Hevesy, that, to me, was where the fun and the real satisfaction was. And I was finding that less and less now.
Okay, so I was trying to find this quote before we started. This is from one of my favorite all-time movies, Chinatown, which is, of course, all about money and power. And this is Noah Cross, who's the evil tycoon, kind of at the center of the spider's web, who tells Jack Nicholson's private eye, who says, you know, you're respectable, you want to keep your name out of the paper, you're too rich. And Noah Cross responds, of course I'm respectable, I'm old. Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Well, I hope I'm not a whore.
Are you respectable?
I don't, you know, it's really funny. I've been here so long. I have. It's been 30 years or more in the industry, 25 almost at the Capitol. And yeah, since I've announced I'm leaving, I've been surprised at some of the comments, to be honest. Because like I said, I don't view myself that way. I just view myself as a working reporter. And that's not, you know, false modesty. That's really how I looked at it. I used to joke that I'm confidently insecure, confident in my abilities, insecure anyone will notice. So it's nice that people have noticed, but it also makes me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because I'm not used to that kind of thing.
As a tabloid reporter, you're not working on a book. You're not, you know, it's not going in a library. It's you live it on the day, right?
First draft of history, as they say.
Right.
And you know, I got lucky. I wanted to work for New York City paper. I worked for two. I wanted to make a mark. I feel like I have, you know, my own way. And so I don't have the regrets of I wish I got to accomplish X, Y, and Z. The only regret is I wish the industry wasn't shifting so rapidly and that I thought I'd always retire in the field. But you know, not many people get to then change fields and be excited about it. And I felt had I waited, I would have had to, you know, if I ended up getting laid off in 6 months, a year or two, I would have been scrambling for a job because I needed one, as opposed to finding one that really kind of excited me. And up until recently, nothing had excited me. I never had a plan B with all our layoffs and all the buyouts and everything happening. My wife used to say, what's your plan B? And I never could come up with one. So when I found one that really excited me, I just figured it's the right time.
Yeah, it's a good way to end it.
Indeed. All right, Ken, it's been a pleasure working with you. We look forward to staying in touch and remaining good friends. So thanks for everything.
I appreciate everything. Thank you. Be well.
Governor, you know, I'm setting myself up for a quip here. The Daily News outline.
A whip?
A quip.
Oh, sorry.
The Daily News.
Wishful thinking.